Centers. So our first speaker today will be Felicia Barnett, who's coming in from EPA's Office of Research and Development. And Felicia has been on the previous seminars in the series, but I'll just remind everybody that she is the director of the Site Characterization and Monitoring Technical Support Center, which is responsible for site investigation, technical support, and the development and maintenance of ProUCL. She is also the Region 4 Superfund and Technology Liaison for the Office of Research and Development. Felicia joined EPA back in 1985 as a site assessment manager for the Superfund program, and she's also worked as an RPM at Hazardous Waste Site Cleanups and has over 20 years here at EPA ORD. We'll then move over to our two primary speakers, Travis Linscomb-Hatfield from Neptune & Company, as well as Polona Carson, also from Neptune & Company. Travis is a graduate from the University of Colorado at Boulder, and he basically has a master's in statistics and has strong experience with working both Bayesian and frequentist statistical methods. And so this experience is going to tie back to his interest in both transportation and natural resource economics, and have given him a lot of opportunities to work with statistical models. And then Polona Carson has more than 25 years of experience working on multidisciplinary teams in the area of quality assurance, environmental science, analytical chemistry, material science, and management. And her graduate research work was on the evaluation and optimization of sampling design for monitoring forest soil using composite samples. So with those brief introductions, let me call up our opening materials and invite Felicia to join us for some kickoff remarks. Felicia?
Thank you, Jane. I just want to welcome everybody to this third and the last in our series of seminars on the utilization of ProUCL. As Jane introduced you and those from the, and may know from the previous seminar, my name is Felicia Barnett, and I'm the director of EPA's Office of Research and Development Site Characterization and Monitoring Tech Support Center. The SEMTSC, as we call it, is responsible for creating and maintaining ProUCL. ProUCL is a statistical software package tool free on EPA's website for the analysis of environmental data sets with and without non-detect observations. It provides statistical methods and graphical tools to address many environmental sampling and statistical issues. Though it's not intended to be able to address every situation, nor is the only option for environmental statistics, it was developed to be an easy-to-use option for many standard statistical issues encountered when evaluating data. This third seminar in the series will focus on using ProUCL for background analysis. The first and second seminars in this series are already available for viewing online if you weren't able to attend or want to view specific parts at your own pace. We hope you find ProUCL to be a useful tool and that those seminars assist you with understanding both its capabilities and navigating its program. As previously noted, we will be responding to all questions asked here during the session or after and documenting those answers on ClueIn. Additionally, SEMTSC supplies internal and sometimes limited external responses to those who use it. If one has questions or issues with using ProUCL, we do try to answer those as much as we possibly can. On the website, you will find my name and contact information. I recommend contacting me via email with as much detail as possible, including screenshots. We will try to respond to your questions as promptly as we can. I will now turn the seminar over on ProUCL utilization over to Travis and Polona with Neptune Inc. to start the instruction on background level calculations. Travis?
All right, sweet. Thanks a bunch, Jane and Felicia. Like they mentioned, everybody, welcome back to our third ProUCL Utilization 2020 presentation, which is super fun to say three times fast. Today we're going to, as I mentioned, talk about background threshold values, as well as finally getting in and talking about UCLs, you know, everybody's favorite ProUCL topic. So as we're leading into some, I don't know, fairly heavy statistical things today, I wanted to make sure that we took a second to recap what we talked about in our first two presentations, as we're definitely going to be using some of that info again today. In our first presentation, we mainly talked about really getting familiar with the basics of ProUCL as a whole, as well as starting to look at some functionality that might not have been known to ProUCL veterans, such as, you know, loading box plots, histograms, and other graphical tools, as well as how to handle the basics of hypothesis testing, which is not going to be super touched on today, but it's going to be referenced that we definitely need to be doing that in a lot of situations. We also discussed some of the built-in ways that ProUCL handles non-detects and missing values, which we'll be coming up to again today. And additionally, we touched on outliers and their treatment, which is another thing that we're definitely going to talk about, as some of our limit estimates can be really sensitive to those outliers' existence. So in our second presentation, we talked about trend analysis, as Gene reminded us earlier today. We discussed non-parametric methods of trend testing, as well as some parametric ones, namely in that was OLS regression and subsequent residual analysis to check the assumptions of that OLS regression. We also touched on why non-detects can be so tricky to deal with in certain trend analysis situations, and we'll be touching on that a bit more today as well. So let's go ahead and dig on in. So as I mentioned today, we're going to be focused on background threshold values and UCLs, but we're going to go ahead and start off with some vocabulary and definitions, just followed off by some discussions about the different background threshold value options that we have at our disposal within ProUCL. And then finally, we'll actually get to talk about UCLs, you know, upper confidence limits, and covering certain situations in which a user should maybe feel a little apprehensive about just blindly trusting certain ProUCL outputs without at least a little bit of scrutiny. Cool. And so just like our last two presentations, as Gene mentioned, we're going to be taking a couple quick, like, knowledge check breaks and time to answer some questions in the middle and at the end of the presentation. And also, just like the last ones, I know we haven't sent them out yet, but we'll be getting the full set of answers to questions that folks ask that we don't have time to get to within the next couple weeks here. Cool. And so just as a reminder, for this presentation, a lot of the material that I'm going to be bringing to you guys is actually located in the ProUCL user and tech guides. Those are going to be included with your ProUCL 5.1 download, which is awesome. The technical guide especially is going to have a lot more detailed information on some of the statistical tests and guidance that we can't really get into today just because of time constraints. And the user guide is going to be great for more of a just how do I go about doing this, even if I don't necessarily care about the nitty-gritty of each of the tests. But I'm certainly going to be trying to hit the highlights as we go through here today. Cool. And so, Gene, if I could have screen sharing capabilities.
And as Travis pulls up that live screen share, I'll just remind everyone that you'll have additional controls at the top of those windows to either maximize his screen, the slides, or to change how you're viewing his slide within that particular window.
All right. Cool. And so just like last time, I'm going to be leaving the pretty standard ProUCL setup here with the nav panel and the log panel on, just so that I make sure I'm not making any silly mistakes as we go through. And cool, so let's go ahead and just get our data loaded in here first. So the first one that we're going to be taking a look at is going to be the Superfund data set that was included in your ProUCL download. This data set's just really going to get us familiar with some of the different distributional options for UTLs, UCLs, and whatnot. But it doesn't have any non-detects in it, so don't worry, we're going to get to those. So let's go ahead and pull that up. Boop. And then so this is just going to be inside of wherever your ProUCL 5.1 folder is, and then inside of data there. And then we're going to go ahead and click Superfund, open her up. In a minute. There we go. Cool. And so what we're going to see here is that in this data set, we've got a bunch of different analytes with about 20 to 24 different observations for each of them. Again, no non-detects, but it's nice because our sample size is pretty solid for everything we're going to be looking at today. So then the second one we're going to be playing with is that TCE, NDs, blanks, data, blah, 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 file, which is, again, in the ProUCL download. And we're generally going to be using this one really just as an example that includes non-detects for both our background threshold values and UCLs today. So we'll go ahead and open up that guy as well. There we go. Sweet. And so as we see here, this data set is actually going to be about as small as we can get for some of our sample size restrictions, as there's 12 total observations. I know there's 14 rows, but we have two missing, so 12. And there's only 8 actual non-detects, so we're pretty limited on sample size there. Cool. And so coming back away from the screen sharing actually right now, we can keep showing it, but nothing's going to be happening for a minute, is first we're going to go ahead and discuss some of the different background threshold value options that we have available to us. And as we get into that, I really wanted to make sure everybody's on the same page with a few definitions. If you're super well-versed statistically speaking, it's going to be a lot of review, but it's important stuff so that people are quoting stats that actually make sense. So, namely, we really want to make sure that everybody understands the definitions for confidence as well as coverage when it comes to our limits. So, first off, for confidence, as we can see on this little slide, is that we're referring to our belief that 95 or whatever level of confidence percent of the time, something that we are interested in is going to happen. So, for example, 95% confidence interval on the mean, as I'm sure everyone in their intro to stats class remembers, is saying that 95% confidence interval is saying that if we took a series of samples and generated confidence intervals umpteen times, we believe that the population mean would be within that generated confidence interval 95% of the time. And that's, again, given that all those sets of samples were coming from the same populational distribution. And that's, you know, going to give us that rough estimate of where we believe our population mean lives. However, it's not directly just saying the probability of the actual population mean is between these two points 95% of the time within a frequentist framework. There's a little finagly wording in there that's kind of annoying. So our next estimate, or our next definition, is going to be of coverage. That can be thought of as the percent of future samples that should fall below a given percentile. So i.e. if we're looking at a coverage of 0.5 or 50%, we're expecting to see half of our future samples fall below whatever estimate it is that we're making. So if we combine those two concepts, we're going to have what we need to start looking at something like a 95-95 UTL, where what we're saying is that we're building a confidence interval around the 95th percentile of a given future data set, and saying that we believe 95% of the time that the 95th percentile will fall below our 95-95 UTL. So a lot of 95s. So if anyone still has questions on, you know, that verbiage or the definitions there, feel free to stare a bit more at the definitions in the user and tech guides, because they're in there. Or feel free to ask anything specific in the Q&A box, and we'll try and get to that, or, you know, as always, consult a statistician. So with those definitions in mind, let's actually look at the basically four different background threshold value options available to us inside of ProUCL, and when we might actually be using them. So first off, of these background threshold value, you know, not to exceed values, we're going to be best using them when we're really hamstrung on, like, future site sample size. So to build these background threshold values, we want to have a minimum of about 10 samples in our background data set, but they should generally be only really used to compare against a relatively small number of future site samples. So, you know, like somewhere like 1 to 6, but and as soon as you get anywhere up near about 10 or so, as far as the future site samples, not the background ones. We should instead be comparing them using some of the hypothesis testing methods that we discussed in our first presentation. So, you know, those t-tests, Wilcox and rank sum tests, all that stuff is what we're going to want to be using when we have really adequate site sample data. But if we're really hamstrung, we only got, you know, 5 or 6 site samples, these not to exceed background threshold value markers are going to be useful. Cool. So, yeah, and I just really want to reiterate that like, it's really for when you're struggling on site samples. We're not trying to cut corners there. It's just if you only have a few, these are going to be nice for creating not to exceed values. But the more samples you use there, the more chance of a false positive that you're going to get just due to the nature of the statistics. So with that in mind, the first of our background threshold value options that we're going to be looking at is just using a high percentile of the data. So these are going to be a pretty simple measure, just looking at how high or low in an ordered data set a value might fall. They're a bit nice because they help ignore it at least a little bit of the potential outliers and all that jazz on either end of the scale. Whereas a lot of our other statistics are going to be just exceptionally susceptible to those. And not to say that this isn't, but just to a slightly lesser degree. And so just as a note, if you'll remember back in our first presentation when we looked at hypothesis testing stuff as well, we can also be using these high percentiles as a potential point of comparison for, you know, the percentile test or proportion test or anything within that framework. So next up, we've got a UPL, or just our upper prediction limit. This is going to be what we use to just generate a level of confidence to say for the next independent sample from our population, we expect that that value should be below this point. And so if we actually look at just a graph given from our last presentation, we'll see that these are shown on some of the OLS trend analysis graphs in ProUCL as red lines surrounding the regression. So obviously those are going to be wider generally than the standard confidence interval on the mean, the green lines on there. As we're saying, we're pulling a single sample as opposed to averaging over a series of values. Like we would when we're interpreting a standard confidence interval. So basically, on that graph, just at any given point, if you took a given sample, you definitely expect it 95% of the time within those two red lines. If you took a bunch of samples, you'd expect the mean between those two green lines 95% of the time. So just sort of a little understanding check there. So next up is going to be a pretty common one. That's going to be the upper tolerance limit, or UTL, which can give us a pretty solid not to exceed value for comparing site to background data sets. This one's going to be used as an example a couple times, and we talked about it a minute ago, with that 95-95 UTL. Again, just saying that we're 95% certain that the 95th percentile of the data would fall below this 95-95 UTL value. It's sometimes chosen as a not-to-exceed value as it tends to be greater than the maximum of the background data set. So it's going to just give us a nice, like, solid level that it's going to be fairly hard to get a false positive on. But this is, again, going to start being really sensitive to outliers and skew in the data, or in the background data, so just be aware. And finally, we have a bit of a niche one that can be super useful in the right situation, and this is going to be the upper simultaneous limit. So this limit provides us with a value such that we believe all future samples will fall below it 95% of the time. So in essence, what we're going to be doing is making a slightly harder to violate version of the 95-95 UTL, since we're basically just moving the coverage from 95% to 100% of the data. This method is going to be nice if you're in a kind of weird, funky situation where you've decided to use a not-to-exceed value, but you actually have more than that, like six or so samples in sight to compare to, and you've decided for some reason hypothesis testing just isn't the way to go for your site, as it is a lot more resistant to that false positive rate going up as your number of site samples increases. And again, though, I want to stress that generally you're going to want to use hypothesis testing if your site sample size is large enough. And like I said, the reason that this is going to work decently, though, even if you do have a little bit higher of a sample size, is that that false positive error rate doesn't go up nearly as much like it does with a UTL or a UPL or what have you, which, you know, kind of makes sense, right? Because with a UTL, if you take more and more samples, eventually one is going to be above that bound where you were, you know, bounding it at the 95th percentile of the data, whereas, you know, with a USL, you're saying, I never expect anything to ever be above this. One thing to be careful with here, though, is that while all of these can be, like I said, pretty sensitive to outliers, the USL can be, like, extremely sensitive. So with that in mind, there are pretty specific use cases for it, but in order for them to be reliable, the data actually needs to be really quite tidy and free of outliers, which, if we remember from our first presentation, can only be done if... you know, if we're trying to remove outliers, if we have a very good reason to believe that those outlier points do not really belong in the actual data population. In addition to that, weirdly, actually having more than about 20-ish background observations can make this a bit unreliable as well. So if this happens to match up with your data, it can be a useful tool. But sometimes it's simply not going to be the right tool for the job. And again, not to be the dead horse here, but if you're concerned, not sure which one to use, don't know what fits your site, make sure to consult a statistician. Because as for which of these background threshold values or not to exceed options is going to be the most relevant for your site, I can't give you a totally definitive answer. You know, depending on site characteristics as well as the analyte you're looking for and, you know, whatever different things you're trying to be doing, different ones might be preferable in different situations. Cool. So let's go ahead and actually do stuff in ProUCL with that. So we're going to go ahead and first create the background threshold values for the Superfund data. So, boom, going to go ahead and get that selected. And so when we go up here to the upper limits and BTVs, we're going to see that ProUCL is smart enough to just not display the option to use non-detects since there aren't any in the data set. But if we when we click down and do this on the TCE stuff here, we could see that it does give us that choice. But for right now, super fun. So when we click all here, we're going to go ahead and hit manganese, and then we'll see that in these options, we have a couple different things we can take a look at. I'm going to go ahead and leave the confidence and coverage values at 95%, just to keep with the standard here, as well as keeping our K value at 1. So this K value is going to be adjusted based on how many site samples we're comparing. In a specific future data set, and it can really inflate the UPL values, especially as it increases. So for right now, we're just going to stick with just comparing to one observation, so just so you know, it's all there. And the bootstraps, we're going to leave that at 2,000. That's a pretty reasonable thing to do. And as far as the grouping column, it's there, but we don't have anything to be grouping by this time, so we're going to leave that one blank. Cool. So now the first thing we're going to want to remember when we're looking at this here is that we're treating our data as, in this case, a set of background data. So when what we're doing here is we're going to be generating these estimates to compare some future set of data to. So we'll want to check that our distributions in this data, we'll want to check what distributions our data seem to be following in this. So I know we gave a bit more of a specific run-through on goodness of fit for our first presentation, but in the interest of time here and not saying the same thing over and over again, we'll go ahead and just trust these recommendations that are presented by ProUCL here using some of these goodness of fit tests. For our manganese data, we're going to see that, first off, they don't appear normal at the 95% confidence level. So we're going to go ahead and nix that option. But we will see that it appears to follow both the gamma and the log normal distributions. Now, so if you ever run into a case such as this, generally you're going to want to rely on the gamma choices over the log normal choices. Again, general statement. Mainly because log normal distributions have a tendency to produce rather unstable values as far as limit estimations go. They can tend to both actually over and underestimate reliable estimates depending on the situation, whereas gammas tend to be a bit less sensitive to the weird skew or funkiness going on in the data, and they retain that nice positive-only nature that the log normal brings. Cool. So if we go down here, we'll see the nicely gathered up BTV options. So we can see a few things right off the bat. Basically, the four background threshold value options that I presented to you guys are going to be generally increasing in order of size. So we're going to have our 95th percentile right down here, our UPL, then our two options of 95-95 UTL, and then our USL as well up there. And so just by the way, I'm going to go ahead and actually create a little box plot for us just so that we can kind of see what's going on in the data visually so that we can compare these nicely. So boom, going to create that. There we go. All right. So now when we're looking at this, we can see, first off, there's definitely three values that are a little concerning on the outlier sense of things. But when we look at at everything compared to our different BTV options, we can see first off that the 95th percentile is going to be kind of right below that first possible outlier, whereas then our UPL is going to be, you know, just above it, not much different. But our UTLs and then USLs are actually going to be like way up here. So our UTL is going to be just below the very max of the data, or maybe just above it if you're using the other option there. And then the USL is actually going to be solidly above the max of this data set. So as you can see, again, like gonna matter that those are there. And we're not going to talk about it super directly right now, but I promise we'll get to that a little bit later. Cool. And so with that in mind, actually, let's go ahead and I just want to show you that at the bottom of your ProUCL output for background threshold values, it's actually going to be letting us know down here that the USL can tend to give us those rather high estimates of a background threshold value. This, again, intrinsically makes sense, as it's the value that we never expect to see another value above it in any future data. And that high estimate can definitely be exacerbated by having, you know, possible outliers, such as these 3 points, or any possible contamination involvement in the background data set. or even starting with that, you know, background sample size exceeding roughly 20, as I had mentioned there. So, you know, and just as a general point that I know I'd mentioned before, but for most of these limits, we're going to want to have that background sample size of around 10 or so. So we're doing good here since we had about that 24. Cool. So next up, we're going to go through this sort of same progression, but taking a look at the different options with non-detects included. So let's go ahead and flip back to our TCE data here. And so again, this one's, you know, included in your download, should be easily available for you. But we'll see that actually, since of the 12 observations that we have, only 8 of them are detects, we're really going to be right on the cusp of, around the cusp of acceptable sample size here, or just below it, but that's okay for right now. Also, we do see that we nicely have really only one non-detect level, so all these guys that are non-detect seem to only be at that 0.68 value, so that's nice. I think our Kaplan-Meier estimates are going to be able to handle it a little bit better than if we had a whole bunch of weirdness going on in there. And just like I'd mentioned before, obviously these two boxes here are just going to be treated as missing values and totally disregarded by ProUCL. Cool. So let's go ahead and run our background threshold value tests as well as create that second box plot just so that we can compare these in the same way that we did our Superfund data. Cool. So boom. There we go. With non-detects. And then all. And again, TCE there. And we're going to leave these options just the same as we had before. We're going to create that. And we'll go back again. Graphs, box plots with non-detects, TCE. And we're just going to not adjust any of the options here again. All right. Okay, there we go. Cool. So when we take a look at this output here, we're going to see that first off, the ProUC output is telling us that it appears that the data is approximately normal. So this is going to come about because, as we can see, one of the goodness of fit tests thinks that the data is normal, and the other one thinks that it is not normal. Now, we're going to go ahead and definitely take these with a grain of salt because we only have that sample size of 8 detected values. But since I can look down here and see that both of the gamma goodness of fit tests think that it is gamma distributed, I'm probably going to go ahead and generally lean this way a little bit easier. With that being said, we definitely want to make sure and be careful with the gamma ROS generated values for our non-detects. Again, just due to that small sample size and fairly high percentage of non-detects. And instead, we might want to look down a little farther here. So these gamma ROS guys, maybe not ideal, but instead use some of these Kaplan-Meier generated values. And so again, here we're going to go ahead and see that generally increasing trend from percentile to UPL to 95-95 UTL and then USL. However, in this case, our USL is actually going to be a little bit lower than our 95-95 UTL. My guess, without getting super into the stats of it, is this is an artifact of our really low sample size. And again, which one of these values is going to be right for your situation is something that you're going to need to either seek guidance on for your site or have discussions as to what might be the right case in your, you know, case-by-case basis. So just to touch back on that Kaplan-Meier versus the gamma regression on order statistics stuff, if we take a comparison between our gamma ROS and the Kaplan-Meier imputed values for our, you know, background threshold values, it's going to seem like this is a little more reasonable. So like with our 95-95 UTL, Kaplan-Meier has it at about, you know, 11.5, maybe 12, something like that, which these are around 10 at the very top with, again, a possible outlier. So it's, you know, just a little bit above these possible outliers that, you know, in this case, let's pretend they are totally related to the distribution and it's just wider than we expected. Versus if we looked up here at this gamma ROS, it's going to be sending them out here at, you know, 20, 28, which just seems rather unreasonable considering we haven't seen anything even half that size. So, you know, maybe not ideal. Cool. So I think that's going to cover what we're talking about as far as just background threshold values. And that's going to go ahead and actually take us to our first little question break. I know that was maybe a lot to digest, but hopefully you're all down for another one of our little quick quiz games, questions, and then we can, you know, get back into the stat the action. So, Gene, if you want to throw up those first question sets.
All right, will do. So we're going to start our first quiz. If you've played along with these in the past, you'll notice there's a new window at the top of your screen. You'll see a question appear, and you'll have a series of options that you can select multiple choice style. You have a limited amount of time. The quicker you guess the right answer, the more points you get. So if your data appears only to follow gamma and log normal distributions, which pro-UCL option should you generally prefer? Is it going to be gamma, log normal, normal, or non-parametric? All right, and our next question up on the screen. Which BTV option in ProUCL is the most sensitive to outliers? Is it the UPL, the UTL, or the USL? And for those of you that may be on a mobile device, if you're unable to see those on the screen, you can always respond using the Q&A window. All right, Travis, looks like we went through, and a couple of people have gotten those concepts pretty well hammered in there.
Oh.
All right, I'm going to switch us back, but we'll take time for our Q&A break. Remember, there is a window in the lower right corner of your screen where you can type in questions and comments. And I'm going to take this first one now, and we'll try to get through a couple more here before we go back to the session. So, one of your attendees noted that when you were discussing the background threshold value options at the very beginning, you mentioned that when you get more than 10 samples, you should be using hypothesis testing. Are you referring to more than 10 background samples, or are you saying that if your background is based on less than 10 samples, your data set for comparison has more than 10 samples?
So what I was saying there is that you want at least 10 samples in your background data set to be able to generate reliable background threshold value estimates. However, if you have more than about 10 site sample data, then you should be using those in a hypothesis testing sense and comparing those two. And not using just a not-to-exceed value. But both of those would kind of rely on having a reasonable at least 10 sample size in background and site to be able to do that. Let me rephrase that. To do hypothesis, you want at least 10 in both. To do just these background threshold value, you know, not-to-exceed situations, you still need 10 in the background. But if you have less than that in the site sample, this is going to be sort of a stopgap measure.
Okay. Another attendee noted that they were instructed to not remove outliers when computing BTVs. They wanted to know if you agree with that approach.
I don't know that I have a specific answer as far as guidance. From a purely statistical standpoint, I would say the same idea that we have said before, as if you do make the choice to remove something for a very legitimate reason, you still need to make sure to include the statistics presented with and without those outliers. If you are running into a situation where guidance specifically says don't remove it on your site, then obviously don't remove it. But if it's open to interpretation, like I said, you need to make sure and include both options there, so that whoever you're showing it to can see, either way, with and without.
Okay, and we've had a couple people sort of chiming in with comments on regulations and different approaches in different states, just so that they wanted just to share that some regulators are actually requiring outlier removal from background but not from the site data. So there may be some regulatory policies that are influencing what they're doing with their data sets as well.
Right, and that's why I've been trying to kind of steer clear of the regulatory things, because I know that they definitely vary from place to place and time to time. So I'm just trying to keep it to the general statistical thought process on it.
Okay. I will try to squeeze in one more question here. Can you describe the difference between WH and HW gamma estimates?
Yeah, so the WH and HW actually is just happening to be two weirdly similar names. So it's the Wilson-Hilferty test and the Hawkins-Wixley test, which is also impossible to say five times fast. So they're just two different statistical testing methods. Both of them are, I believe, pretty well outlined in the technical guide. But as far as going into the nitty-gritty of what makes each one a little different, I feel like that's probably beyond the purview of the call.
Okay. Well, I think in the interest of time, we'll go ahead and pause with the questions, but we'll come back to them later on. So why don't we carry on with the presentation, and then I'll remind the audience, keep those questions and comments in, and we'll pause for another break in a little while.
Sweet. Sounds great. All right. So the time has come, the moment that you've all been waiting 2.5 presentations for, finally talking about UCLs. So anyways, I'd like to say that I kind of assume in this area that most users are probably the most familiar with it, as it's, you know, the one that probably gets the most use within ProUCL. That being said, it's definitely important to make sure that everyone is, you know, generating their output correctly and then interpreting that output in an actual meaningful way. So as we dig into them, I want to make sure again that everyone is on the same page with UCLs, similar to what I talked about with the UTLs, since quoting random statistics when you don't really know what they mean is pretty not helpful. So for UCLs, similar to our UTLs, we're establishing that level of confidence, usually 95%, but whatever. And instead of setting a level of coverage at, say, that 95th percentile, which we did with our 95-95 UTL, we're instead just focusing on the mean. Therefore, our UCL estimates are going to be inherently less extreme than our UTL estimates given the same data set. And so just to reiterate, though, using the same language that we did with the UTLs, we're saying that 95% UCL is our estimate that, given a set of sample data from our population, we expect the population mean to fall below that 95% UCL value 95% of the times that we generated it using various data sets. Cool. And so because of that interpretation, it makes sense that we should be using UCLs as more of a comparison of distributional tendencies to a given level rather than what we did with the BTVs, UTL, whatever stuff, where we were looking for really any single value that we could collect that happened to be above that generated value. So for us to have a reliable look at these distributional tendencies to create our UCLs, we're going to want to make sure that we have a bare minimum of about 8 to 10-ish samples for our parametric UCLs and at least 14 to 15 samples for our non-parametric, bootstrap-type UCLs. Cool. And so this time we're going to go ahead and just pop back in and reuse our Superfund data set. This time we're just going to pretend and treat it like this. This is site data that's being generated as opposed to background data, you know, just to keep you guys on your toes here. So cool. So just like most of the other statistical tests that we've been mentioning here, UCLs can also be very sensitive to outliers. So again, we're just going to go ahead and have this old manganese box plot up here. And for this first pass, I'm going to keep these potential outliers in and go ahead and load up our UCL estimates for manganese as well. So I'm going to go back to Superfunds, UCLs, EPCs, all, manganese, oop. And then for our options, we're going to, again, leave confidence level at 0.95 and bootstrap operations at about 2,000. That's fine. Cool. Oop, that's a bit much. There we go. There we go. Cool. And so, all right, just to be double clear here, while we are reusing this data set for the purposes of the presentation, this time we're not building the, you know, BTV not to exceed values, but instead just calculating the 95% UCL of the manganese data that we have present here. They're not, you know, interchangeable statistics or anything like that. We're measuring, you know, very different things to be used in very different ways. Cool, but when we take a look at it, thankfully, we do see that ProUCL is consistent in its estimation of which distributions the manganese data seems to come from. We can see that it's not normal, but it appears it could come from the gamma or the log normal distribution. And so in this case, ProUCL has done a nice job of giving us just our general 95% adjusted gamma UCL option as the recommended UCL choice, which is the one I would totally take in this case. Like, not a problem. Good job, ProUCL. You nailed it. But as we can see, our adjusted gamma UCL is at that 171 value there, which puts it right about here, like really possibly outside of that whisker there, and pretty high in relation to most of our data. So let's go ahead and just to illustrate the point that I've been making of the, you know, sensitivity to outliers, we're going to go back and operate under the assumption that we went through our whole process that we detailed in our first presentation as to when and why it might possibly be reasonable to deem it necessary to remove some outliers from our data, and came to the conclusion that we, in fact, should here, that, you know, they don't represent the data at all, they were from laboratory errors, blah, 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 stuff that has nothing to do with the data that we actually collected. Cool, so we're going to go back to our Superfund data here, and inside of manganese, we're going to go ahead and remove that 530 value, the 440 value, and the 340 value. Also, just to be clear, when you're if you ever are doing something like this in your actual data, don't do what I just did right there. We're just doing that for presentation's sake. You definitely want to keep them in the data, but, you know, flag them somehow or create a separate data set without it, but don't just, you know, wildly go deleting stuff. Cool. So let's go ahead and reload these UCLs for manganese without that in there. And then, so first off, we're going to see that removing these values now gets us to a place where both the Shapiro-Wilk and Lilifor's tests for the normal distribution seem to believe that the data is normal. So cool, neat stuff. Then ProUCL is giving us this 95% student TUCL, which is at 84, which puts us much more in line with something we might expect to see from this data. However, if we really just wanted to have a nice apples-to-apples comparison here, if we looked back at the gamma-adjusted 95% UCL, we'll see it's at 94. So they're, you know, a bit different, but really within the same ballpark. And just removing those three values, you know, drop the UCL by basically half. So definitely, definitely sensitive. And while I didn't necessarily show it to you with the UTLs, UPLs, that kind of stuff, that same level of change is there as well. So just wanted to, like, physically actually show you that level of change at some point in this presentation, because it's pretty drastic. So really making sure your data is what it should be is right. Because, you know, if you have high values that are really not representative of your data, you know, maybe it's right to take them out, but simply saying a value is high is definitely not a good enough reason to just discard that data point on its own. Cool. So I hope I've illustrated that point enough, but I'm sure that the, okay, but should I just always use the recommended UCL question is definitely one that's going to pop up, and in a very general sense, most of the time, yeah, whatever it puts out is going to generally be a good idea. However, there's a few cases where it's not quite. So certainly in the case where you have a log normal only situation or data that's just really highly skewed and unruly, it might not necessarily be the case. So let's just go ahead and take a second to go through some of those hypotheticals for different UCL outputs for our data. So first off, if your data follow the normal or the gamma distributions, generally you're going to be pretty safe taking whatever ProUCL recommends. In those cases, though, you should always take a second to just double check that ProUCL hasn't, you know, tried to pull a fast one on you and recommend the 97.5 or 99% UCL. Which can happen when your data is, you know, particularly skewed or unruly. These aren't necessarily bad distributional estimates, as they're going to provide you with a little more conservative estimate for that UCL, which could be warranted if you have that, you know, particularly skewed or unruly data. However, if what you're really needing to report is that 95% UCL, those are still certainly going to be returned in the output. Now, if your data returns that it's only log normal, so let's go down in here and say, oh, it's only log normal here, and that's it. You should definitely take a bit of a second look at it. So as I mentioned before, log normal distributions can tend to lead to those fairly unstable UCLs in, you know, a few situations, and especially if you see that the HUCL is returned as the recommended UCL from ProUCL, you've definitely got a bit of a red flag. So in those situations, I tend to prefer to rotate to a non-parametric UCL estimate. So like I said before, if it's log normal and gamma or whatever, you know, just maybe use the gamma, you're good. But if it's log normal only, instead looking down at the parametric distributions, or sorry, the parametric estimates of UCLs might be a better choice. Again, you need to make sure you have that increased minimum sample size, though, for some of the bootstrap things of, like I said, you know, roughly 14, 15-ish. Inside of these, my personal preference is that I generally happen to like the bootstrap BCA method, bias corrected and accelerated, if you're curious what that stands for, as a replacement for those suggested HUCLs. The other non-parametric options in here definitely have their merits as well. I mean, the Halls and standard ones are, you know, again, almost exactly the same as the student TUCL in this situation. But I've had reasonably decent success with the BCA one, so that's generally what I look at. But as I've said a million times before, if you have any questions or preoccupations about what might be the best option, as always, consult a statistician. And so as for dealing with UCLs in data sets with non-detects, we're going to go ahead and again swing on back to our TCE data set here. And let's go ahead and pull that guy up. So with non-detects, all, TCE, oop, there we go. And so, again, as we go through here, we're going to see that our data is consistent and follows that approximate normal and also gamma. And so this is an example where you may need to pay a bit of attention to what ProUCL is outputting, as it's going to up here recommend this Kaplan-Meier TUCL here inside of the normal distribution. But if we scroll all the way down, it's going to also recommend that if you have an output such as this, where it has an approximate and an actually fitting, in the case of it saying it's, oh, it's approximate normal, but it also has both of the goodness of fits testing positive for gamma, you might want to use a gamma UCL. Again, we're going to take a bit of a grain of salt on these because of the rather low sample size with the, you know, 8 detected samples. So whichever one you choose here, there's going to be reason for interpretation. But just like before, whichever one you're choosing there, the ROS imputed values are going to be a little bit suspect because of that really small sample size and relatively high non-detects percentage. So we're again going to want to take a look at instead the Kaplan-Meier estimate-based predictions. Yeah, and also just when we're in here, similar to before, we'll see that ProUCL does give us this nice little note here inside of gamma things that if our sample size is over 50, we're going to be using this gamma approximate Kaplan-Meier UCL. And then if it's below 50, we're going to want to take a look at this gamma adjusted Kaplan-Meier UCL for just when we have that smaller sample size. Cool. And so since I just feel like I threw a whole lot of abbreviations and definitions at you guys over the last little bit here, I just wanted to make sure that everybody got a quick recap and ended up on the same page as far as understanding the limits that we just generated. So this little table here, whenever it's up, is just going to give you a little bit of the, just that little quick one-liner of the meanings of what we're talking about. So first, our standard UCL is going to always be referring to a confidence on the mean of the data set, while our UTLs will be basing their confidence on some, you know, specified percentile of the data, and UPLs being that straight, the next observation is going to be below this point 95% of the time, and finally USLs being that niche-specific case where our background set is, you know, pretty tidy, pretty free outliers, and the background sample size is, you know, roughly between like 10 and 20, that can work as a not-to-exceed value, even if we're testing a large number of samples against it and for some reason have decided that we're just not applying hypothesis testing for some reason. Cool. So with all that in mind, let's go ahead and dive into the second quiz of the day.
Okay, so if I had my drum roll music staged, I would have that up. I'm going to pull up our second quiz here on the screen, and we'll go ahead and get started. Remember, the faster you answer the question correctly, the more points you will get. Okay, what does the approximate note mean in ProUCL output for distributional families? And we're queuing up for our second question. Data is log normal only, and the HUCL is returned by ProUCL. What is a generally reasonable alternative to the UCL option? All right, well done, everyone who played along. So let me go back to our split screen view. And Travis, shall we pause for questions here?
We can. I'm also happy to just kind of give a couple little final remarks before we dive into questions, because I know those tend to expand out a little bit.
All right, well then, carry on.
Yeah, sure. I guess just really before we kind of wrapped up and got to those, I just wanted to make sure that we went over a couple little final things. So first off, I mentioned a few times here that we definitely want to spend time thinking about, you know, what background threshold value or hypothesis testing method, if we can get to it, is really going to be the most useful for a site-specific problem, as there's really no silver bullet. And so we also really want to, when we're doing anything like that, make sure to double check our sample size assumptions so that we aren't using unreasonable data for our goals. And, you know, piggybacking on that, we really need to scour to the data to make sure that we do consider any outliers carefully, and, you know, whether or not to include them, whether or not we're going to remove them, and if, you know, we have taken that step of let's not include this, then we need to provide our analysis both with and without those data points in question. And then while doing that, remember that the most important thing is just really documenting all of your analysis steps and decisions so that you have good traceability in there. And that if you hit a point where you're not totally sure what you should be doing, as always, consult a statistician. But I think that's pretty much the tight little wrap-up there, but I'm happy to look at some questions now if we want to.
All right, fantastic. I'm going to start reading through questions that came in earlier, but I'll remind the audience you can continue to submit them using the Q&A window in the bottom portion of your screen. This first question asks, what reason is there for removing an outlier besides showing lab error? Is just mathematical reasoning or logic good enough?
So we talked about that a fair bit in our first presentation, and the short answer to that is pretty much no. Just saying that looks really far away is not good enough. I'd say definitely look at that first presentation if you want even more specific stuff. But yeah, lab errors or something that can demonstrably be shown to not have anything to do with the population that we're looking at, those are really going to be the things that, like, could possibly be a reason to take it out. As I said, include it both ways, though, if you do. But just seeing something that's like, wow, that looks really high, doesn't necessarily mean that you should take it out. You might have hit a hot spot. You might have, I don't know. There's a lot of reasons that it should be kept in.
So I just want to fill in here a little bit. Like, you know, sometimes the designated background area, you don't know all the history about the area, so it may be a hotspot from the previous usage. So basically, in general, outliers can give you a lot of information, additional information about the site, so don't go just by statistical test shows me it's a high value, I'm going to disregard it, but you dig a little bit in. So, possible history on the site. The other option is when it doesn't make sense to remove the outlier is that it may be a different geology. So it's a naturally occurring a small spot, smaller area with different geology, and it can create a higher, so it can translate into a higher value. Or just the heterogeneity of background area. So don't be too quick to remove outliers because they tell you a lot.
Hopefully that covers some stuff. Yeah.
Okay, and then again, a lot of questions on outliers. So somebody wanted to know, why not just run an outlier test, which is available in ProUCL to confirm the presence of the outliers?
Yeah, so the ProUCL test to confirm that presence of possible outliers is going to assume normality of the data, assuming removal of the outliers, I believe. And so, A, first of all, you're not always going to have that, so it's not always going to be reliable. And B, even if that is true, there could be situations where you're just hitting data, or you're hitting those hotspots, as we mentioned, that, you know, might not be part of your distribution, but may, or the distribution that you think you're looking at, but the site just might be a little more heterogeneous than you thought it was. So definitely looking at those and using those as rationale on top of some of the stuff you were looking at to possibly remove outliers is good. But just seeing that by itself, I would be hesitant to remove something just solely based on seeing that one test.
Okay. And then, so in addition to doing that outlier testing, you would recommend visualizing the data on a plot before removing those outliers?
That for sure, as well as what Polona was saying as far as digging into why you might have seen those values that are very different from the main portion of your data. So, like, as we said, really looking into, like, was there a possible lab error? Was there a possible sampling error? Was there some extreme dilution that went into it? You know, or some weird natural occurrence. But, yeah, just purely looking at a number and just purely looking at the statistical test is doing the statistical test is good for sure. Definitely do that. But just by itself, I would have a hard time rationalizing that as a good enough reason to remove a piece of data.
Okay. We had someone who wanted to know, where is the recommended UCL shown?
Oh, yeah, sorry. So if you just scroll down to the bottom here, it's going to say that suggested UCL to use. Also within the output up here, the one that is blue highlighted is the recommended one to use. And sometimes it'll give you a couple. Usually it's just going to give you one. But, yeah, if you're looking for your bare minimum, just which one does it say I should use, if you scroll down to the bottom in the suggested UCL to use area, it's going to give you that.
Okay. Another area of questions here. Someone noted that there is also an option for non-parametric in the UTLs. They wanted to know,
yeah,
how does the presence of the non-detects affect the non-parametric ROS UTL value that is generated by ProUCL in the output? They're wondering, is this non-parametric UTL option sensitive to outliers?
Yeah, so that's a spicy question right there. So I would say anything with ROS stuff is going to, I would think, definitely be sensitive to outliers. As far as the, oh, dang it, this isn't going to show it because it already has, dang, that's annoying. Let me see if I can show this a little better. There we go. So the non-parametric stuff, I believe, with non-detects included, is gonna have a bit harder time showing them here. I don't remember off the top of my head if it always does or not. It looks like in this it's not, because it's showing that it's detected normal. I apologize. What was the question again? I kind of got lost in there.
Sure. So let me call up. So it says they were noting again that option for the non-parametric in UTLs. They wanted to know how the presence of the non-detects affects the non-parametric UTL value that is generated by ProUCL. And then their second question was, is this non-parametric UTL option sensitive to outliers?
I think I'll let someone field this one.
Yeah, so one problem is ROS. ROS doesn't behave normally nicely, so be careful, because there is some rounding and it can generate a lot of numbers with so the same values, which won't lead to a good conclusion. It's on our list to improve, actually.
Someone add that to the list of stuff that we want better in ProUCL. So.
Yeah, so just anything ROS, be careful.
Be careful.
Okay. All right. Someone wanted to know, is there any way to calculate lower confidence limits in ProUCL?
Is the answer. There, if you look in the ProUCL user guide, in the UCL's chapter, there is a note about how to do it. It's not super direct, but it basically is, off the top of my head, it's basically taking some of the estimates that you generate out, and then you're going to sort of flip and subtract them. But it is explained at least lightly in there, inside the user guide.
Okay.
Yes, but it's not super easy.
Okay. So this is a particular application question. In this particular situation, the user wants to know that if a particular 95% UCL for soil shows a value above an action limit, and you evacuate this hotspot and then rerun the statistics, they were wondering, in that scenario, is it appropriate to look at the same UCL distribution in the reanalysis, particularly if the reanalysis wants to use a different distribution?
I would say use the distribution that your data is actually showing. So if you excavated an area, got rid of, you know, removed that soil, that data point is no longer valid, and you reran it, I would say look at the stuff that your current data is showing. When I was showing that comparison of the gamma ones, that was more just to show, you know, that estimate actually changed. But had I removed those values, you know, again, for a legitimate reason, and that reanalysis had popped up that it was normal, I would use that normal estimated UCL. I would just take the recommended one there and not necessarily be stuck on the fact that it said before that it was gamma. I would take that it says currently it is normal.
Okay. What about the situation where multiple UCLs are recommended? Which one should you select, or how should you go about making that determination?
So, again, as long as we kind of follow the rules I had sort of outlined there before of, you know, generally lean to the ones where the goodness of fit tests are strongest to say that they believe it is this distribution, leaning slightly away from the log normal ones, la-da-da. If we've kind of filtered by those and we still have multiple to look at, they're all just different methods of creating them. I would kind of take each of them with a potential grain of salt. If, like, most of them are about the same and one is wildly off in the distance, maybe take a look at why that test is producing such a different answer, and see if it is something that matters for your site. But as to the answer of which one should I always choose, kind of like I've said through these, there's no necessarily silver bullet. But, it, you know, if your data is normal, I mean, taking the like, TUCL is a pretty standard thing. You know, there's merits to all of them, but providing all the different ones and then using the one that seems like the most common standard UCL is not an unreasonable approach.
Okay. Okay. So how about this one? A number of people have commented on the Chebyshev method or the output, and they've been told not to use it. Do you have any comments
on
that?
That is another one that generally, like, if I saw the TUCL and the Chebyshev UCL being presented, I would lean towards the TUCL for sure. It's definitely a more common standard one that's going to have a more robust answer that's not going to get wiggled around too much by weirdness in the data. I should have included that. The Chebyshev one is, I personally wouldn't say it's quite as unreliable as the HUCL, but it's something that is definitely questionable.
Okay, and then when you're calculating BTV values, would you ever change the assumed K value to something other than 1?
Yeah, so generally speaking, I'm going to have it at 1. That tweak in there is, like I said, it's going to be for if you're comparing multiple different values to it, as opposed to just one at a time there. But since you're trying to keep your sample size low, or your site sample size low, if you're comparing to background threshold values, you can move it up to 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, if you're looking at those. But you're only really going to see much of a difference as far as the UPL change, as to what ProUCL spits back at you. So if you're using UTLs or USLs, I don't believe it's going to change much from that, like 1 to 6 range, but the UPL will change.
Okay. I think we'll take one or two more questions here before we go through some of our final comments. An attendee noted that the gamma UTLs always give more significant digits than another distribution. They wanted to know if it was okay to round up these values to less significant digits that are more in line with what a normal distribution or other distribution would be providing them.
I mean, I feel like producing less significant digits is always a safer option than using more significant digits. I don't, off the top of my head, know exactly how these are coded in here, so I don't know if the significant digits calculations were taken into consideration when producing these. So I can't directly answer that. But I guess I would say, as a general rule of thumb, if you know you're providing things with a small amount of significant digits, probably use a smaller number of significant digits when you're coming out with your answer as well.
Not more rounding than your data.
Yeah, but not more rounding than your data has. Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's just take one more question here, and I know that there are many more left in the queue. Please know if we don't take your question here live, it's not disappearing. We just didn't have a chance to get to it live, but we'll talk about follow-on questions or other questions that we may not have addressed live before we close things out. So one more question here. And this is a comment that one of the attendees said that they learned that using UTL testing can lead to false negatives. Specifically, they'll run into a situation where site data that are below the UTL will be identified as background when really they are not. They oftentimes will then request mean testing to support UTL testing, and they're wondering if this is necessary.
Yeah, so that's what I was saying as far as if we have enough site sample data, we'd prefer to do hypothesis testing. Use that, like t-test comparison if they're normal, whatever, like, and really compare if the background distribution is the same as the site distribution, and that's going to be a much more rigorous, solid approach. This is, I hesitate to use the word stopgap, but kind of, if you don't have that capability to take those samples for some reason, using these not to exceed values it's a way to do it if you really can't get to that hypothesis testing level.
Okay. All right, and as noted, I know that there are still many other questions left in the queue, but let's get out of this official Q&A period. The questions are not disappearing. We're going to go through some final remarks here, so I'm going to turn off the screen sharing and see if we have any final closing thoughts and kind of touch upon what people can do if they have additional questions or we didn't address them live today. So, Felicia, if you're on the phones, you should be able to come off of mute.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, I have, I just wanted to tell everyone we appreciate you for attending the classes and your interest in ProUCL and its use. As we close out, I did want to let everybody know one of the reasons that we ask, you know, what would you like to see Pro-UCL do in this final course is that we are working on an update that we hope to have in next year in 2021. And so we are looking at some of the, you know, just improving the program as much as we can. We're moving it to the most, you know, the latest Windows platform, Windows 10. It was done on a Windows 8 basis. So we're trying to make sure that it's going to be usable for the foreseeable future. And so if you do have some additional comments that you'd like to get to me about the program, you can send them to me via email. My email address is on the website. And so with that, like I said, we will be finishing up the last of these questions for those that we didn't get to during the course. And we thank you very much for attending these seminars. Thank you, Jean.
All right. Thanks so very much. Let me walk through just a few final reminders before we close things out today. So I know a number of you had asked about additional questions or what should you do if you had some other feedback or input that wasn't addressed today. So as was noted, contact information is available for our instructors and organizers. They will also be working with me to comb through the questions that we still have left in the queue to try to directly get answers to you. I will ask each of you just a few quick reminders. If you wanted copies of the presentation materials, we have those available to download. The data sets that they use, the Superfund and the TCE non-detect one, those were all part of the Pro-UCL download, but we have them available to access from the seminar links or resources page. If you didn't see it earlier, try hitting refresh on your browser. They're both there. And as noted, I would ask each of you to take a moment to fill out our online feedback form to let us know what you thought of today's session. I often get asked for participation certificates, and we will provide you with one of those as soon as you submit feedback for the session. Please be sure, though, to correctly enter your email address and check the box at the bottom of the form, which certifies you were there for the whole session or you replayed the entire recording. As long as you check that box and put your email address in correctly, once you submit the feedback form, you'll have access to one of these certificates that you can either save or print out for your own records. Sometimes the emails wind up getting stuck in your junk or spam folders. You may need to look closely there, but we can reissue them if they don't arrive. I'll also let you know that if you shared the room with others, so for example, if you registered and then invited others to join you in a conference room, each person in that room can fill out the feedback form on their own to get their own certificate, even if they didn't register individually to attend. So I'd ask those of you who are joining us, please get the link to the seminar feedback form. You'll see that on the middle right under related URLs, and then be sure to share that with those of you who joined us so they can share their thoughts to join us in today's session. And today's session was recorded. You'll automatically get an email as soon as the archive for our session is available, so you can play it back on demand. If you had a hard time keeping up with the demos, please know with the recorded version, you can pause it, start it, fast forward, rewind it, and sort of play it back at your own speed to follow along with those examples. So with that, I will echo Felicia's thanks for our presenters for joining us for today's session and sharing their expertise. And then I also wanted to thank all of you who joined us on today's broadcast. We had nearly 450 live participants today. We hope that you found this to be a valuable expenditure of your time.